The following program is sponsored by Linda's Construction. This is the WCCO Home Improvement Show, brought to you by Linda's Construction. One call, one contractor. Linda's Construction provides Minnesota and Wisconsin with the best products and workmanship. They provide leaf guard gutters, asphalt roofing, metal roofing, season guard replacement windows, exterior siding, remodeling, new construction, and more. If you've got questions, they've got answers this hour. Here's Denny Long and Andy Lindis.
And good morning. Welcome to CCO's and Lindis Construction Home Improvement Hour. Denny Long here. Alex Lindis is in for Andy today.
Heyo.
Good to see you again.
You
Alex.
Too. Yeah.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. You know, it's. I tried to get in here a couple times, but you know, I got a new baby at home 3 months on Wednesday. So that's exciting. And she is the third
three
girl.
3 months.
She's the third girl in my family. I just got a picture there. All three of them sitting in my bed watching cartoons right now.
It's pretty cute. Fun time, I'll
yeah.
tell you.
Oh, yeah.
Enjoy that.
Yeah, no, it should be good now. And some friends of mine that have daughters in the 12 to 15 range say you'll get your rest now and be ready yeah. for it. So we'll see what happens.
Very good, good. Well, that's a fun time. It
oh,
really
yeah.
is. But it's good to see you again.
Yeah,
Alex,
you too.
Alex, and we're going to talk. Well, we're going to let you drive the show. If
yeah,
you, have,
you know.
Yeah,
I was coming in, and you know, I was thinking about stuff, and I always this week my father had come into the office, and he was. We have a little place up north in Amory, and it's just a little garage with a heater in it.
Okay.
And he was in there. Of course, it's getting colder out now, so he's trying to turn the heater on. And he asked me, he's like, did you ever start the pilot? I said, Dad doesn't have a pilot. It's got an electronic igniter.
Okay.
So he was like, well, it's not working. So he was going to try to get someone to go out there. And I said, well, was there a green light flashing in the control panel on the furnace? It's the one that hangs from the ceiling, you know?
Okay.
And he goes, yeah. I said, well, what's happened is it's the exhaust vent on the outside has frozen, and that's what's happening. It's a safety feature on all these heaters, and we've talked about it several times, is if it can't exhaust, it will actually shut itself down.
Just so, because of the carbon monoxide.
Because of the carbon monoxide, yeah. If it can't vent, it will shut itself down. I don't even know if there may be some really old furnaces out there that don't have that yet,
right.
But everyone made since 1980-something. Has this feature. So, you know, it's just funny to think, you know, 40 years he's been doing this. And it just, you know, when you're experts, you just kind of,
yeah,
you just don't think about it. So that's why it's always good to just continually talk about these things and this home maintenance. So there's things you can do if you run into these problems instead of just, you know, immediately calling someone and spending the $150 to have someone uh-huh. do something really simple. Just try troubleshoot a little bit. The first thing you always look at if your furnace isn't working is the venting. Absolutely, first thing you should look at, because it's something that simple. You go flip that vent open and it happens. So we had all that rain, right? And then it froze almost immediately that evening. Went from snow or rain
yeah,
to snow.
Yeah, right.
And that's when that happened. The other time is when it's extremely cold out. We're talking like 30, 40 below. And it's that moisture coming out of the furnace, actually, when it stops, it comes back down. It freezes before it opens again. So those are the two times you're really concerned about it. If it's super, super cold out, like 25, 30 below, and then also when it's warm during the day and then freezes at night, because then you have a lot of wet moisture that can possibly freeze those. So that was just something I thought was a neat subject to talk about this time of year. It's always, you know, furnaces can be very tricky. We were involved with something where a homeowner, not just furnaces, water heaters, where we had a customer of ours we did work on a few years ago actually passed away. Now we were doing siding on it, and what happened, he went out to the house and the water heater was not venting out properly, and carbon monoxide came in. He fell asleep on the couch in the basement.
Oh,
and
no.
ended up passing away.
No.
So something that's simple, and that's why it's always, when you're starting the stuff for the first time every year, just make sure you pay attention to it. Usually that's when it happens, because it's been sitting there for a while, especially cabins. If you guys have cabins, you go up there, turn your water heater on. Just pay attention to it. Watch it run. Watch it go through a whole cycle, because it can be very, very dangerous. Extremely dangerous.
Well, you know what I bought recently? We, on our health show on Sundays, we were talking with a doctor a few Sundays ago from HCMC, and he showed me a little portable CO detector.
Yeah.
that a lot of home inspectors will use. And so I bought one.
It'll save your life.
And that
$5, $10.
What about you at your house? You got a young family. You got three little girls.
Yeah.
How many CO detectors do you have in your house?
I've got three, one on each level.
Okay.
You know, I got one in the kitchen area. Anywhere you're gonna have gas. Yeah. You know, kitchen area, in the basement. And I also have one upstairs. I don't really have anything worried upstairs, but that's where all our bedrooms are. So, the basement's obviously the main one because that's where your furnace is. Carbon monoxide actually goes down, and we were just talking about your issue when you hit that water pipe, how it actually sank into the ground and came through your interior walls in your basement.
Yeah, the gas pipe, yeah.
Yeah, so that gas can get tricky ways, but typically what it's going to do, it's going to end up going, traveling down. So have one in the basement. Always check them regularly. You know, I think they say replace those ones every 5 years, I believe.
Some of them have their lithium batteries are, they say, good for 10 years.
Yeah.
Some of them.
I like the ones that plug into the wall personally.
Hardwired.
Because then you don't have to worry about, you know, batteries going bad or anything.
At least
like
have
that.
A battery backup in case of power.
And
battery.
It's simple. So that's this time of season. Check the fire detectors, check or your smoke alarms, check your carbon monoxide, and check your furnaces and all that stuff, and just make sure everything's working well. Once you do your first assessment, you know, your first little get everything rolling, now that it's getting cold out, right? Usually you should be pretty good. Just make sure that initial check is pretty thorough.
All right. Yeah. We'll answer any kind of home improvement question you may have by phone or by text. Let me give you the phone number, 651-989-9226, or send a text, 81807. Sue in Chaska has been waiting there for a while. Thank you, Sue. What's your question?
Morning, Sue.
Thank you for taking my call. We've had our house since 1990, and of course they want to replace the whole sidewalk. It has been raised, but, you know, on the expansions, it is caulking in there, and we need it to look better. So, of course, we went to the hardware stores, and they've got products like Quikrete and concrete finishes and acrylic finishes. Do you have any experience of something you could recommend for us that would save us money?
Well, I guess what exactly are you trying to do? Is it cracked, sagging?
The cracks, the expansions, it's just not looking very good. And we just want it to look nicer without pulling it all out and replacing the whole thing. And I know a couple of these finishes even have the pebble finish.
Yeah, exposed egg.
Yeah, and some are called granite grip. And I've done a little homework, but when you go to the hardware stores, nobody seems to be very knowledgeable about these products.
Yeah, you know, when you start getting to stuff like that, it's really hard to make it look good and do it well.
And last
your first time. The big thing is the condition of the concrete. We talk about this all the time. When you're doing garage floors, people want to come in and they want to coat their garage floor. And I got a good friend, Black Hawk Garage Door, that does this. And lots of times he goes in and he says, well, your concrete's not good enough to put this covering on it because I'm not going to spend $3,000 to $5,000 to coat it when it's not going to last because your concrete's deteriorating. So you always got to fix the concrete first. So depending on the condition of it, it's a few cracks here and there. You can absolutely get some crack filler. You can use a sealer on it, which is very simple to do, as I see all my concrete in my house, and that works well. Putting a new coating over the top of it, I don't really have any experience with that, but I do know some guys that do that. One of my good friends does concrete, and he does this all the time. It's an overlay. They can go into concrete, put a small, thin layer of concrete over it, and they stamp it or put exposed egg in it. So there are things to do that, but doing it yourself, I would not recommend that. So I would suggest calling a local concrete expert and see what they can do, because lots of times the concrete's not in good enough condition to coat it. Is usually what ends up happening. So,
you know, sometimes we, and your brother too, recommends Sue to call a local company called Semstone.
Yeah.
C-E-M-S-T, like think cement and stone. And they are the experts, and they may have some tips for you.
Absolutely.
For doing that.
And, you know, these guys, obviously their life is concrete. They got tons of different coatings. That's where I buy all my sealer from. It's called Super Sealer. Works great, lasts a long time. And you need to do that to protect your concrete. If you don't, it's eventually going to, elements are going to take over, and it's going to, you know, with all the salt and stuff that we have, especially in driveways and sidewalks, that salt takes a beating on those. So again, you know, without really seeing the condition of it, it's hard to recommend whether you should fix it or replace it. And sometimes replacing it may be the better option, because putting a sealer on it to last another year or 2 years before it completely goes down.
Especially if you're going to live there for a while.
Yeah, especially if you're going to live there for a while and get it done right and have it look nice for a long time.
So thank you. Good luck. We have to take a break. We'll
Sounds
be back,
good.
Though, with more. 6-5, we'll have those folks on the line. Hang on. We'll answer your questions here coming up in a couple of minutes. Or send a text, and we'll pick up on those as well. 81807.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It's a Saturday morning in CCO land. We're talking home improvement, as we always like to do in this hour. Thanks to our friends at Lindus Construction, L-I-N-D-U-S. Alex Lindus is in for Andy today, helping us out here. We're talking prepping our home for the rest of the winter.
Yeah, you know, tis the season. It was 60 degrees up until this last weekend. So, it's stuff you don't think about, but it's amazing how just a couple days can completely change how your house performs.
The theater of season.
Right?
I see Alex, one line is open, phone line, if you want to fill it, 651-989-9226. Let's go back to the phones. Who's first up here? It would be Paul calling from Eden Prairie. Paul, you're on with Alex.
Yeah, Paul.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I've got just a quick question on my heater and furnace. We've got a two-story home and two zones. Our basement is finished. We don't have a zone in our basement, but we have a zone on the main floor and a zone on the second floor. And our wall thermostat mount is set in the run program mode, and we set it for roughly 70 degrees. We have it go down during the day when we're gone and back up at night and overnight. And it seems to be going up when it's set at 70 degrees, it goes to 72 and 73 degrees. I like seeing it go that way as opposed to the other way. But I'm just curious as if you know why it would be heating up more. And zone two, by the way, is set at 70 and stays at 70 and seems to be running properly. But I'm just curious as to know why we might be getting extra heat and warmer temperatures in the main floor when it's set at 70. And like I say, it gets up to 72, 73 degrees before we notice it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I kind of had that same thing with my shed. I noticed that when I turned the heat up, I should ask, what kind of furnace do you have and what kind of heat source? Is it forced air? Is it?
I don't know what.
Do you have vents that hot air blows out of?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
So that's a forced air system. So lots of times it's almost just like a catch-up deal, right? In my shed, it's an in-floor heat system there, so it's a little bit different, but it's almost like the same concept. I set it to 65 degrees, or it's 55 degrees. When I'm doing stuff in there, I'll set it to 65. And then it typically ends somewhere around 68, 69 degrees because it's just the catch-up. So depending on your thermostat and where it is and the time that air, the furnace, notices that the temperature is there, it's already pumped enough warm air in your house to bring it up to that, you know, that higher. So if you got it set at 70 and ends up being 73 degrees or 74 degrees, usually what that is your furnace is the thermostat is not catching all of the air right away. So what happens is it overfills.
Oh, okay.
The heat keeps pumping, even though the thermostat's, you know, way over there. But by time it says, okay, we're at 70 degrees, it's already pumped that air in, and that air eventually just travels and spreads around. What that also tells me is you got probably pretty good insulation in that house, that it does catch up that quickly and sustains a higher temperature of your thermostat. Now, a couple ways that I deal with it is I just know that that's going to happen, and I keep my temperature a little lower. But then also, again, it's going to drop down there before it kicks back in. So a real good way to do it would be a blower door test really tells a lot of air movement in your house.
Yeah.
And how to really, you know, understand how the heat and everything's moving. So we do that a lot of times, go to a house and do a blower door test and say, well, you got air moving here, you got a lot of air moving over here. And sometimes the thermostats are not in the best spot to be efficient. Now it's gonna work, but as far as efficiency, where it hits 70, stops immediately, and that's where it stays. When it drops boulder, it turns back on. So that may be what's happening there, is the location of your
thermostat. Paul, have you ever had a blower door test done there?
I have not had one done, but that might be something that we do, and then maybe just set it down to 68 or 69 degrees. And
yeah.
I just don't want to have it feel like it was maybe over running, you know, or it was, you know, something was, you know, going too much. But it doesn't sound like that.
Now, furnaces are pretty simple. They and with thermostats, they have the trigger that turns them on, a trigger that shuts them off, and it's all based on where you set that temperature. So it can only run when that thermostat tells it to run. So it's all about the air movement and where that
and
location
where
is.
And where it's located.
Where it's
that
located
really
is a big deal.
Important,
yeah, for sure.
Well, good luck with that, Paul. If you want to get that blower door test done, why don't you call 100 Leaf Guard, and they'll get that taken care of. All right, you know what we have to do, Alex? We've got to take a break.
Sounds good.
However, we have another half hour of the show to go, so those Bev and Bill, everybody else on the line, don't go away, and we'll pick up on text messages as well. Good morning. Welcome back to this portion of our Home Improvement Show. Danny Long here with Alex Lindis from Lindis Construction. Speaking of that, let's talk a little bit. We just started talking about something. Let's bring it on the air a little bit, what you wanted to chat about.
Yeah, well, I noticed there was a text message, and it was a new homeowner.
Yeah.
Brand new home, new homeowner. What things to look for in home maintenance? And honestly, I could tell you everything that I know, but without experience, it's going to be tough because that's just one of those things where you learn. So obviously your furnace filters, you know, making sure that that's all nice and clean, making sure that, you know, you don't, all the venting and the windows and the doors and everything is good there. But something a lot of people fail to do, and it's still amazing to me, some people in their houses have never been inside their attics.
Mm.
Not one time, 30, 40 years they lived in the house, and not once have they been in their attic. And when you get in your attic, that's going to tell you how your house is performing. And I was talking about this with the moisture and the humidity and frost and all these things. Moisture in house, undetected moisture, I shouldn't say. Leaks are okay because that tells us there's a problem and we can fix it. Undetected moisture going unnoticed is what is going to literally rot your house out. And I was telling you a home that we looked at, or me and my cousin replaced siding. We tore off the siding. And the entire sheeting was rotted, so we pulled the sheeting off. And it wasn't just that. The entire structure, the 2x4 walls, were completely rotted out. And there's really only one way that happens, is that moisture is trapped inside that cavity, that wall cavity. So when I went inside this house, because we had to take the windows out to replace all the framing, right? So I went inside this home, and as soon as I went inside, I immediately got a sense of way too much moisture. I mean, you can tell. You go to people's houses, you open up that door, and that waft of steam comes out that door. It's just way too much moisture in the house. I mean, we're talking need to get down to 30%, 25%. So the best advice I can give to a new homeowner is check the humidity levels and the moisture in your house. Everything else is not that big of a deal, and you can figure it out as you go. But moisture, if that goes undetected, is going to – it can cause a lot of problems. And inside your attic is a telltale sign, especially in the winter. If there's moisture in your house and it's leaking out or causing problems, you will see frost. You will see frost on your trusses, on your decking. You'll see it on your vent pipes. You'll see where that moisture or that air is coming up. So not only can you see where the moisture is, you can see where the air is leaking into your attics, which is not good because it'll create ice dams and you know loss of energy. So you can know either what to seal or what to fix. But keep in mind, moisture around 30%, it's not that comfortable in house, but it's what needs to happen to keep the houses from literally rotting from the inside out. So that house that I was telling you, we replaced all the walls. Basically, what was happening is so much moisture, humidity in the house going through the walls and getting stuck in that cavity. So she had this replaced 8 years ago, and it was a storm, right? The hail.
Mm-hmm.
So we replaced 8-year-old siding, and that happened within 8 years.
That rotting.
The rotting. The entire wall was rotted out. The whole structure. And now, if she didn't have a hailstorm, I just wonder about that. She would have lived there and kept that siding on there with mold.
Yeah.
I mean, the mold was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And it was wet. It never dried. The wood was so sopping wet, it never dried in 8 years.
I think this new homeowner you were talking about, when we received the text, just moved in October. And maybe this person, if they haven't done yet, should call Lindis about a blower door test.
Yeah, and that's one thing we you know, blower door tests will tell you exactly how your house is going to perform efficiency-wise, right? So we'll be able to tell where it's leaking, where stuff like that. But as far as the moisture, that's something easily remedied by every homeowner. It's as simple as if you're doing a lot of cooking, open the front door for 5-10 minutes. You know, get that moisture out of there. Yeah, it's going to let cold air in, but that little bit of cold air is not going to rot your house out. Get that moisture out of there right away. Keep your fans on when you take a, when you take a shower. So I've got all new timed fans in my house now. We spend $10. They all get 10, 20, 30, 40, and 60 minutes, right? So try to keep it around 60 minutes. When you take a shower, they say it takes about 45 to 60 minutes to bring the moisture level back to where it was before you shower.
Interesting.
So, which a lot of people go in, they turn the fan on, take a shower. When they leave, they turn the fan off.
Right.
Well, that's not going to help because the moisture is still in there. And then when you open the door, it leaks into the house. And then it's going to travel either into your walls, into your ceiling, or where places where you don't want it.
Gee, all right. So some tips for the new homeowner.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get back to the phones, Alex. Bev in Minneapolis has been waiting. Thank you, Bev. What is your question?
Well, I have a question about a lock on a storm door. Last week when that driving rain and the wind came, I discovered when I went out on my deck that I couldn't get back in the house, and I didn't have a key, and I had my pajamas on.
Oh, no.
No.
So I finally got in. And I unthawed it with a hairdryer, but within 45 minutes, it was frozen shut again.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to take it off. Well, then my son told me, well, you should have, after you opened it up with the hairdryer, you should have sprayed it with rubbing alcohol.
Sure.
He said that will make it evaporate and it won't happen again.
Right.
Do you know anything about that?
Yeah. Yeah, that would work. They even make these, it's basically the same thing that's in these key lock containers. And honestly, I feel your pain because literally the other day I went and I bought a new freezer and I had to get my trailer. So we had a brand new trailer out back. And of course, it's locked up tighter than Fort Knox. There's a lock on every thing on that trailer. And of course, every one was completely froze. I couldn't even move it. So I had to run down to the hardware store and get a de-icer. A key de-icer, and that's basically, you know, rubbing alcohol works, anything. I'm not exactly sure the chemical that they use, but it's very similar. It doesn't freeze, and it allows the moisture to evaporate. So, yeah, that would work. And, you know, like I said, that storm that we had, if you have an exterior lock, it's going to have water in it, and it's going to be froze up. So there's, you know, other than, you know, like you said, the hair dryer, letting it dry out, but that the rubbing alcohol should do the trick, too.
Well, thanks, Barry.
Yeah. That's funny. That's funny you mentioned that because I was pretty frustrated trying to get that key in there.
But you went in your pajamas.
No, it was not in my pajamas.
Okay.
No.
All right. Thank you, Bev. Bill is calling from Waverly with a question. Go ahead, Bill.
Morning, Bill.
I like your show.
Thank you.
I live in an old 100-year-old farmhouse, 100-plus, remodeled, you know, and my basement under the kitchen. The cement, you scratch it and it falls apart, you know, and I was wondering if there's something I could put on there that would seal that up to keep it. I got some spots where it's collapsing and you got to sweep up a little pile once in a while. But
you know, so it's a poured foundation wall or is it a block or is it?
This is a block foundation. Well, the kitchen wall basement was built in 1953 and the rest of the house was from 1909.
Oh, so it's probably a stone wall in the other parts of it.
Bottles and crap like that in there.
Right.
And,
you know, I just spent a lot of time with Jesse Trouble with safebasements.com.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great to really sit with him and you know, you really start to understand how much of an expert he is. The stuff that he's doing is so amazing. So the advice that I can give you is, one, you're dealing with foundations, which supports your house. I would absolutely consult a professional to get it done correctly. Now, he may be able to come out and say, yeah, you can do this and this yourself. That's fine, but this is the way I would do it, and it's going to cost this much. That's where I would go. Safebasements.com, Jesse Trouble, hands down the leading expert in foundation repairs and fixes.
Not just around here either.
No, not just around here. He's
known nationwide.
Yeah, he just bought a new company in Florida. So, you know, I mean, he's getting recognized for the things that he's doing. And it's not so much he's going in and replacing all this stuff. He's refurbishing these old foundations to last longer than what they were originally designed to. So it's pretty amazing how you can come in and be pretty cost effective and make it still last. But again, without seeing it, when you got crumbling concrete like that, it could just be some surface stuff that's happening because it's exposed in the basement and, again, moisture and all that stuff. But when you start messing with that and the foundation, first, I just throw out my hands and call a professional. So safebasements.com, check them out, Jesse Trouble.
Okay, very good, there Bill. Thank you. 651-989-9226. Here's the text number, 81807. Speaking of which, let's go back to the humidity level in homes again. Yeah. Alex, you had mentioned a couple of different figures, but what the texter wants to know, what is humidity level for winter comfort?
Well,
25-30?
Yeah, 25-30. They say below zero, you want to be into the teens.
Really?
That's what they say. Now, when you start getting below 20, I mean, you're waking up with a sore throat and stuff like that. What we see is when you hover right around 20 to 30, it's when you get over 30, that's when you can start to cause problems if it's super, super cold out, you know. And that's the other thing is we got some awesome information on our website, and I should direct people there, lindisconstruction.com. There's a whole list of moisture and stuff to look at in homes. Oh. So you can read up on everything that we're talking about today. But the other thing is the temperature of the house. You know, people want to keep their homes at 72, 73 degrees, stuff right. like that. Well, inherently, that's going to create problems when it's a lot colder outside because that temperature change. When it's the big temperature change, that's when you start to get moisture on the windows, you know, moisture in your walls, stuff like that. So it's not just humidity level. As it all works together. So keeping your home around 65, 68 degrees and keeping the moisture level below 30, you should eliminate most of your moisture issues at that point. So try to keep it under 30 and try to keep it, you know, 68-ish, 69, 70, below 70 right around in there, and it should have no issues.
All right.
Yeah.
Alex, we have to take a quick break here. We have more show to come, of course. Your home improvement questions by phone or by text, always welcome. 651-989-9226. And the text number, and we'll pick up on those again, too, 81807.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
And a good morning to you. Welcome back to this portion of our home improvement show. We thank Linda's Construction for bringing this to us. How many years? I was telling Andy, your brother, I can't even remember.
7 years?
Maybe more.
Well, see, I remember you guys doing it when I was doing sales, and I've been out of sales for 5 years now. So
it's got to be seven or more.
Yeah.
All right.
It's amazing, isn't it? Time flies when you're having fun.
We appreciate it.
Yeah.
We appreciate our listeners as well, and there's folks on the line and texters too. Let's see how many we can help out here this morning. Sally is calling from Madison Lake. Sally, you're on with Alex Lindis.
Morning, Sally.
Hi. I've got a house near Mankato that has a wood foundation. It's about 33, 34 years old. And it's wonderful. The basement never smells, and it's always nice and warm. But we've got a Lennox furnace that the basement level is always 10 to 12 degrees warmer than the other two floors in the house. Uh-huh. And I've got the vents turned off in the basement. And I'm just wondering, why is it still so warm? What else do I need to do to bring that up?
I don't know. I was going to say close all your vents in the basement, but you already did that.
Yeah, that's what I thought, you know, to push it up. But
yeah,
it's still really warm down there, which is nice, but I wish it would be upstairs.
Yeah, you know, without looking at it, so furnaces are rated for the square footage that they're going to heat, right? And
right.
Depending on what your unit is designed for, it may be underpowered or it could be overpowered too. The other thing is we were talking about this earlier, is where that thermostat's located. So
the thermostat's in the center of the house on the main floor.
Okay. And that's
so
that's,
it keeps, you know, if you keep those two, the main floor and the upper floor, the temperature that I set it at, but the basement is always considerably warmer.
It's overheated, yeah. So,
yeah.
I mean, it could be something that it's always going to be there because imagine all your ducting is coming off that furnace. It's running through your ceiling in your basement, and you're going to get conductive heat from that.
Okay.
So any time, like a room where the furnace is in, it's always going to be warmer. Your furnace room is always going to, because it's going to have that conductive heat coming off of the unit.
Is a wood foundation keeping it warmer also?
Yeah. Yeah. My father loves wood foundations.
He
swears by them. How much, you know, we built a house for my cousin. And we're like, well, let's do a wood foundation. I'm like, God, wood and, you know, in soil and water. And he goes, it's going to the comfort level goes up, and if it's done right, it can last longer than concrete.
No
if it's,
kidding.
Yeah, as long as the drainage
great.
And the...
It never smells. It never gets damp.
Right, right. It doesn't get musty.
Mm. No, not at all.
Yeah, so I would... some advice is have a furnace guy come out and make sure that unit is designed to handle the square footage there. And then he might be able to assess whether or not it's either fixable. Maybe they can change some of the venting or where it actually comes off from. They can maybe put a different duct to push it to the attic more, or put a damper in it.
Okay.
So there are some things they could possibly do. It's just with you get a professional out there who knows exactly what he's doing. That's my recommendation.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thanks, Sally. Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, I had
you.
That in my house right now before I finished my basement.
Yeah.
It would get so hot down there, and I closed my vents, and of course it pushed all the heat then up. So that fixed it for me. But she already did that.
She was way
ahead. That's all I got.
Yeah. All right. Let's go back to the phones, Alex. Bob in Maple Grove is next. Bob, what's your question for Alex?
Hi, Alex. I have a 1970s-built Rambler, and when the house was built, it was all electric. We have been in the house for quite some time, and about 25 years ago, we put in central air and central heating, forced air gas. In the hallway upstairs, there is a pressure intake that heats the air as it comes in and provides fresh air. And I was thinking, you know, we haven't really been using it, but you were talking about humidity. How effective is something like that for dealing with this?
So when you say a fresh air intake, is that just like a cold air return for your heater, or is it a separate air exchanger?
No, it's a separate air exchanger. It's got a switch on the wall.
Yep.
And, so, you know, I was thinking, well, if I'm not going to use it, I'm just going to put some insulation up there and disconnect the wires.
Sure.
You were talking about this air intake.
Yeah.
And, so is that something I should, utilize more?
Yeah. Yeah, so a lot of those air exchanger units have dehumidifier systems built into them. So whatever moisture they're taking from the outside to pump in, they're removing that moisture, and then vice versa. So if it's a separate unit, I would absolutely run that.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Very good.
Yeah.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Bob. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Susie, who's calling from Arden Hills. Hi, Susie.
Morning, Susie.
Hi, Danny. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Nicely, thank you. I have a question about our 5-year-old high efficiency furnace. If we're gone for an extended period of time, what is a good temperature setting, and should we leave the fan running continuously?
Keeping the fan running is always a good thing to keep that moisture or the air moving around the house. We always say that, you know, keep the fan running, because especially if you got 3 levels, and that's something I should have mentioned to that last caller who is really warm in the basement, keeping that fan on, it's going to keep circulating that air from downstairs to upstairs, even when the furnace isn't running. So that can be good. Now, when you're away, you might want to consider not leaving that on, of course, with the other problems that could happen if it breaks down or whatever.
Well,
but as far as the temperature wise, if you're not going to be in that house, you know, 50 degrees is pretty safe if it gets really cold out there, because if you start, you know, some people say keep it around 40 when they go leave their cabin, they keep it around 40 degrees. Well, when it's 30 degrees, 30 below zero outside, your outside wall is 0 degrees. It's 40 degrees in the middle of your house, but the outside walls where the pipes are and stuff end up freezing. Seems right around 50. Don't get too much below 50 when you're out of town.
Susie, do you have? Can you control that stuff from where when you get away via your phone? That whole
we just got that this year.
Oh, yeah, right. Good for you.
We didn't know what to do with it, and so, you know, up and down and up and down. Well, you know, back is something to do. Let's play with the furnace. So
right.
Up to 50, and then leave. Don't leave the fan on. You're saying, but that doesn't make sense. Wouldn't you want it to be circulating while you're not there?
Well, I mean, the air circulation is one thing for a comfort level, and then also moisture, too. That's why we leave it on lots of times. So my old house, I left it on all the time because I had 3 levels, really tight, confined spaces. And, again, where, you know, like the last caller was hot upstairs, hot in the basement,
right.
And whatever upstairs. So keeping that air circulating kind of spreads out that warmth. But if you're not there and it's not a comfort issue for you, You're just spending energy keeping that fan blowing. It's more of a comfort thing is why lots of times they leave that fan running.
All right. All right.
Now, Susie, we know, Susie, this is obvious. Mm-hmm. What's the temp where you are now, Susie?
Well, here's the deal. We got back last Tuesday. It was 83 when we left, and we got back Tuesday when the other shoe had dropped. And I'm all bundled up, and we're in the car right now, and we got the temp at 92, I think.
Oh, my gosh.
Your blood is thinned out. Well, all right. Well, Merry Christmas to you guys, and have a safe trip back there, too. Thanks, Susie. All right.
Thanks.
We've got a minute or two to go here. Earlier, a texter, you know, we were talking about sealing concrete exposed ag. How often would you seal your concrete or exposed ag?
I do it mine's on my driveway, and I get it, like, it's a lot of use, cars driving on it, all that stuff. I do it every other fall. So every other September, October, I will seal my concrete. And the reason why I do it in the fall is because that's when it takes most of its abuse. And it's just the salt and the scraping, you know, and the shoveling and all that stuff. It just takes a lot more beating there. So, and then if you do it in the summer, you know, if you do it in the spring, then it's got all summer to deteriorate. And by the time fall comes, it's kind of lost its luster, I guess.
Yeah.
So I always recommend do it in the fall, above 40 degrees. So September's a great time to do it.
Yes, it is.
October, September is a great time to do it. Above 40 degrees so that it cures properly. That's what I would recommend.
30 seconds. What kind of work does Linda's doing right now this time?
We're doing everything. And, you know, everyone who's, you know, worried about getting stuff done in the winter, there's only two products we can't do in the winter. That's asphalt roofing and our leaf guard gutters. Because you get too much ice and it's hard to install it. Yeah. So we can do metal roofing. We can do siding. We can do windows. Any interior work, we can do it now. And our backlog is pretty crazy. So don't hesitate. Do it now, and it's not going to compromise anything doing it in cold weather, warm weather. Right. We can get it done.
1-800-LEAF-GUARD.
You bet.
Good deal. Good to see you, Alex.
You too, Denny.
Take care.